Hi, I'm Marianne, and you are listening to Mary and the Mic. I believe that one of the most important things about us is what we believe about God and what we think He believes about us. In this journey, we will look beyond the surface of Christianity and into the lives of those who have dedicated themselves to following Christ, their joys, heartbreaks, and all those moments in between. Jimmy and Carolyn Peck were married in May 1973, blending a Baptist and Pentecostal background. They began pastoring their first church in 1979 and have dedicated the past 39 years to God's calling upon their lives and their marriage. They served in youth ministries, young adult ministries, pastoring, and directing youth camps and retreats. Throughout this journey, they raised three daughters, Jill, the oldest, Jenny the youngest, and I am Mary in the middle. I watch my parents show up early and stay late, scrub toilets of camp dormitories, and visit countless people in the hospital. I listened as they prayed with grieving families and counseled those who were hurting. I've been amazed at their steadfast energy and passion to their calling. So I sat down with them a few weeks ago to discuss the calling and how it has shaped their lives individually and collectively. We talked about the joys, the hardships, the people who inspired them, mentored them, and in some ways, paved the way for their ministry. We discussed children, parenting, and guiding three girls through the woes of dating. But most importantly, we discussed the center of their faith and the driving force of their ministry, Jesus.
Well, thank you for letting us do this and for basically ransacking your house for a few days, like we do every time we come. We just make a huge mess. But I'm just going to kind of jump right in with the whole, with the pastoring. So when did you first feel like the call of God on your life?
I guess all my life. Maybe about pastoring, 75 or 76, something like that. Went to a leadership conference with Leroy in 75. And I guess that kind of started it.
Bringing out the tears early. Thought we'd get like 5 minutes.
It's all right.
But can you tell that story of when you were in the Air Force?
Well, I went in the Air Force in October of 1970. And I'd been at North Georgia and in the military, and I knew quite a bit about Vietnam. And so I went in 70, and this happened probably in the spring of 72. I was an aircraft electrician, and I'd been at my permanent duty station in Florida, which was a training base for Vietnam, for over a year. And wasn't living right, and I knew it. And some things had happened, and I'd gone down to a buddy's room to just listen to some songs with him. That wasn't making me any happier. And there was an empty room across the hallway, and I went over there and began to pray. And promised God if He would get me out of there, because I knew I was fixing to go to Vietnam. And I didn't want to go to Vietnam the way I was living. And I said, God, if you get me out of here, I'll serve you like I know I'm supposed to. And less than 6 months, I was out with an honorable discharge. I missed Vietnam by 2 days. I got orders to get out and go in the reserves on a Tuesday, and on a Thursday, that same week, I got orders saying I was frozen to that base waiting Southeast Asia orders. So, but God answered my prayer.
And the first orders counted.
The first orders counted, yeah.
So you got, that was 1972.
Yeah.
And you met Mama when?
Later on that year, in August or September, I can't remember which. I was on my way to Charleston Air Force Base for a drill weekend. And my cousin said, bug me about meeting her. And so I said, okay, I'll come by today because I'm going to Charleston. And that's how I met. They introduced me to her at the bank.
And then you dated for how long? You just have to say this.
Don't tell
me. This is not even on my notes. I just want you to say it.
We met in August of that year.
Yeah. And we got married in May of the next year.
In 1975, you kind of felt like you were a pastor or minister.
Yeah.
And then you started pastoring your first church in 1979.
Yeah.
So what was it like when he told you that he wanted to, or he was a minister or pastor?
I wasn't surprised, really, that he said he was going to be a minister or a preacher. But I was very surprised when he said he was going to go pastor, because I never thought about that part of it. I just thought, well, he'll preach some and we'll be all right. So it was hard because I had been in the same church. I mean, that's the only church I knew, and I couldn't even imagine going to another church.
Yeah.
So that was a little tough.
And then, so basically, I mean, I've never known anything other than you all being in the ministry. I don't remember. I mean, I wasn't alive before that. But you've seemed to enjoy it. We'll talk about the hardships of pastoring, but you've really seemed to enjoy it, and you've been a pastor, you've been youth pastor, you've been a district youth minister. Did you have a favorite time or a favorite job? I mean, I know you enjoy what you're doing now, but was there a time that was your favorite, and when you really kind of felt like, I guess, you were right in the middle of the best of ministry?
Well, I've enjoyed both times being at Welcome, and I know today is where I'm supposed to be. But I guess when I was, other than today, I guess I would say when I was the CE director for North Georgia District, and it was just like, I don't know. It's hard to explain. I knew that that God was in practically he was in everything we did, and we got to, and there was so many things that happened. The youth group at Cleveland, where I was youth pastor, exploded, and so many kids got saved, and we started the winter renewal out of that youth group, 26 people, and still going today, over 30 years later, and it grew to almost 1,000 at one time, and other than today, I guess it would be that.
I think that was my favorite time. Both times when you did that.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I think the activities were fun, and just watching hundreds of people coming to God from all over the place and lots of different backgrounds. Yeah. And I think those kind of times probably had they were probably some of the hardest for you, because a lot had to change in the the processes of what you were doing.
They were hard, but people that had gone before us laid the groundwork. Brother Wilson, he taught me more than I can ever thank him for. And then Lynn Dalton. Lynn was the CE director. He set us on a road to change, that changes that needed to be made. He didn't get to make them. but we did. And it was amazing.
I think some of that, when we look back on it now,
I think some of that when we talk about people that went before us, some people sowed, some people planted, some people watered, and then we got to see the growth in a lot of it and the fruit of their labor, because was their labor too. But I do feel like during that time that Jimmy was inspired to do things that maybe nobody had ever done before, and to make some changes that nobody had been able to do. But that was God's leadership.
Yeah.
That was God's direction. It kind of lines up with, I mean, everything happens in its own time, and everything kind of lined up in those ways.
And it did then.
Yeah. So my church, I mean, you all pastored relatively small churches my whole life. And then I go to what would be considered a mega church, even though it's kind of a branch of a mega church. But we, as a church, endured a horrible experience, really, with the pastor of our church a couple of years ago. It was hard for us, and we still don't really know exactly what happened, and in a lot of ways it doesn't matter. But how have you kind of endured the long haul in this whole thing?
Well, sometimes I don't think I endured it very well.
You're still alive.
But I think when you look back, when you've been in it this length of time, to me, I don't think about hard places. No. I think more, it's all the rewarding things that you remember and the things that you've enjoyed and the people you've got to know and how God has just been faithful through
it all.
And I don't even think of all the hard. You know, it never seemed like a burden to me. It never has been a burden to me. It's always been a joy.
And I think that's how you know kind of you're in the right place.
Yeah.
And I do feel like, you know, we were moved in and out of some places very purposefully and strategically, even though we didn't understand it.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you would see later on things that you're like, oh, that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
That's why we moved here, why we moved there, and why we did certain things. One thing is, I was reading some statistics and listening to a sermon series by Andy Stanley, and there is a decline throughout the United States and really kind of all over the world, not of people who say they're Christians, but not only that, but people who kind of actually attend churches, and not so much in this area, but really kind of all over. Do you think the church has, as a whole, has, what is the responsibility or maybe the reasoning for that?
Well, I'm reading a book right now about discipleship, and also about it's talking about Acts 2, how the early church got started. Church is not about what programs you have. Church is about who you serve. And I think that we need to get back to Jesus, and that we're doing this because he's called us to do it.
Right.
I think we've forgot about discipleship. It's when people are saved, when people are born again, that's only the beginning. Somebody discipled us.
Right.
I look back at Leroy Norris and Dennis Phillips and different ones that poured into me and to Carolyn, and go back even to Roy Wilbur, that poured into Carolyn. And I'm afraid that we've forgot how to really disciple people. And by discipling, I mean you encourage them, you lift them up, you bear their burdens. You make them a part of something that they'll never get tired of.
Right.
And that's, I think the church has forgotten that.
One question that I get asked, which I feel like really plays into the discipleship role, is, we have some friends and just acquaintances, and I work with people who aren't Christians, and they ask me all the time about a good God and bad situations. And I feel like that does go back to a lot of discipleship, and even probably has something to do with almost the falling away of Christianity and people who were raised in church or raised in Christian households, and then now as adults they say they don't believe.
Yeah.
But it may be because they don't have a great foundation or places to go. Because we all face hard times. And the biggest thing when you're facing something hard is kind of where do you go during those seasons. So we're 2 days after watching Hurricane Michael just kind of ransack the panhandle of Florida. We just had Hurricane Florence, mass shootings, tsunamis, all these horrible things seem to be happening. So how do you kind of reconcile a good God with bad things?
Well, we live in a sinful world. We live in a fallen world. None of us are perfect. People in the church are not perfect. Pastors and pastors' wives are not perfect. But it all started with Adam and Eve in the garden. When Adam and Eve sinned, it brought sin into the world.
And evil.
And yeah. Evil into the world.
Right. It wasn't here before then.
Right.
It's not God that brought evil.
No.
And I know people want to say, but God is good, and God is good. But we all have hard times. And I think there's sometimes that people look at pastors' families. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I've said this to people before, don't look at our family and think we're perfect.
Mm-mm.
Because we are not. And we have all had, we've had some hard times.
Mm-hmm.
We all have. And you might not see it on the outside, but we've had them. And everybody faces hardships. And this world, even in Bible times, back before Jesus was come to the earth, those people faced battles. They had to fight.
Right.
And it's not God that
brings
the evil.
And it's not God punishing. So
no.
I think that people feel like God is
no.
punishing. It's not that people sinned.
No.
Any time where hurricanes came, it's not that people involved in shootings were a result of any sin that they had. It's just that evil entered the world, and now it rains on all of us. Yeah. And I mean, I always think back to when Jesus said, you know, that I'm telling you all of these things because you're going to have hard times.
Right.
And I'm telling you these things so you'll know where to go.
Yeah.
And so you'll know what to do. But he also said he's overcome the world.
Yeah.
And he's overcome.
And because he's overcome, we're overcomers.
Right.
But you look at Job. I mean, Job was a righteous man.
Right.
And you look at David. David was, he was a mess up, really.
Right.
But God said about David that David was a man after his own heart. God said that.
Right.
And that's what we've got to be. It don't mean that we're going to be perfect, but we can be a God, we can be a man or a woman after God's own heart. And he can bring us through where are you going to turn?
Right.
I mean, when things like this happen, like the hurricane, and, you know, it comes close to me because that's the area that I was stationed in the Air Force. But where can those people turn? Yeah, there's people down there helping them, and the government's going to help. But when they leave, who's going to help? It's only God that can help them.
Right. And I think the most amazing thing and the message that I am not sure that we share enough is that God restores it all.
Yeah.
And probably that's one reason I want to do this, is to show people that God restores everything.
Man.
And there's no stone left unturned.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that people look at the people in the Bible and they look at, you know, some, but they don't, we don't have enough people that are living a Christian life right now saying that he has restored it all to me.
Well, he has and he will.
Right.
And I think we forget to say enough how God loves everybody.
Yeah.
And we sometimes as Christians don't share that love like we need to.
Right.
We get caught up, like in Facebook or in Instagram or any of these things, in the comments. We get caught up as Christians with not showing the love of God.
Yeah.
Right.
Because we'll pop off something that maybe later we thought, maybe I shouldn't have said that. But we need to think that our light is going to shine.
Or not.
Or not shine.
Right.
We're not always shining examples of who Christ is.
Well, we are the light of the world, he said. And it's up to Christians to show the world God's love, and we don't always do it. I know, you know, yeah, there's stuff that aggravates me. But still, I've got to show God's love.
Right. So you were talking about kind of the, you know, the thing about pastors and pastors' families, that people think that everything's perfect and on the outside it looks like it is. And I'm sure people have thought that about us.
Right.
But there's a lot of misconceptions.
Yeah.
And, you know, if your children act out, then it must be something you did. And I feel like pastors are kind of judged probably wrongly based off of things like that, or harshly, I guess. But are there any misconceptions that you can think of kind of right off the bat about pastors and their families that you kind of wish people knew, or you wish they thought of you differently?
Well, I tell our folks that, welcome, look, I'm not perfect.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that especially people that's maybe don't go to church, or maybe that go to church but they're not involved in church, that maybe they look, you know, they want to put, I think sometimes they want to put a pastor where they need to put God.
Right.
And I'm just telling everybody, we ain't perfect.
Right. And you can't put your faith in people. Your faith
Nobody.
Has to be rooted
Nobody.
In God.
Yeah.
There, a few weeks ago, I think in August, there was, I saw this on social media, I don't know these people at all, but there was a young pastor in California that committed suicide, and I think it was very shocking to a lot of the world, Christian and, you know, even non-believers, but that a pastor committed suicide. And I know we've talked about, and probably as a family have experienced, some of the loneliness, not to the point of suicide, but experienced the loneliness that can kind of come with this occupation and this calling, and the depression that comes along with it that people don't expect. And I think that whole thing at least brought some kind of attention to mental health issues, but also that it can happen in the church and in the body of Christ.
Yeah.
And can you speak to that in any way, both of you?
You go ahead.
Well, I think sometimes pastors and pastors' wives don't feel like they have anybody they can really turn to be honest if they're facing some hard things. I've never really felt that way because I've always felt like I had some family or I had some friends that I could go to, but they might be outside the church. I remember going to one church we was at and people, I never felt like I really got to know people there that well. Now people spoke to me and they tried to be friendly and they were friendly, but it was this, hey, how are you? And
that's kind of like you're on the outside.
Yeah. And I'm good today, you know, and that's about as far as it went. But I think you need some people, and they may be outside the congregation, but you need somebody you can go to sometimes and say, I need some prayer, or I need to talk, or I need some direction, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You got to have that.
Yeah.
I think most pastors, and I know I've felt this way, I think most pastors feel that there is nobody that they can share their real heart with when it comes to things that's bothering them. Now, I say nobody. I know you can share. God knows our heart.
Right.
And He knows everything that we're going through. But I think it would be, as far as talking to somebody, I'm just going to be brutally honest. I feel like if I talk to somebody about some of the things that I've gone through, that it wouldn't be 5 minutes till they would be gossiping.
Or judging.
And yeah. And I know I'm probably, I hope I'm wrong, but we even had a counselor at a district conference that said exactly that's the way most pastors feel. And she counsels pastors. I think most folks feel that way. I think most folks in the congregation and most folks that know pastors feels like, well, they got to have it all together.
Right.
Well, we ain't got it all together. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Because we're human.
We're people just
human.
Like they are.
Yeah. And I don't feel like you all ever put any pressure on us as pastors' kids to be a certain way or to, you know, be involved. But I feel like sometimes there was pressure on us from other people, like in Sunday school, to have all the answers. Or if there was anything, like one time I was in 10th grade and we were learning about something and someone mentioned, a teacher mentioned something from the Bible and she automatically called on me. And I was like, that is so judgy to think I would know the answer to that. And I froze. I knew the answer, but I froze because I was just like, why would you think? You think just because my dad's a pastor that I've memorized the Bible or something. But the one thing that I've wished and over and over and over in the churches that you've pastored is that people would kind of just stop talking about you because you know they're doing it. And you know they are, and they won't say that, but people talk about the pastor and they talk about their family, especially when big decisions are coming or when big changes are coming and people don't like it. And I wish they would just pray.
Yeah.
Just quit talking and just pray. If you don't like it, pray. If you like it, pray.
Yeah.
Because I felt like sometimes they want your presence. They want you to preach. They want you to get up. They want you to run everything. They want you to turn the lights on. They want you to turn the lights off. They want you to be there before it opens and close the building down. But they don't want your guidance or your leadership.
Yeah.
And I know you can't really say that,
well,
but
it's the truth. It's the truth.
But they come together, but at the same time, we're all human.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I really, if I have any advice for people who attend churches, is it's just pray for your pastors and pray for their families and for their leadership. So let's talk about parenting, just to clear up a few things. There is a club for pastors' kids. and we have secret meetings where we learn how to be troublemakers. I'm just kidding. But I think we were pretty good for the most part. Not perfect, but pretty good. So were you ever worried about how kind of the ministry would affect us, or if it would affect us? Negatively, mostly, because obviously there's some a lot of positive things, but were you ever worried about leaving churches or moving churches and how that would affect us long term?
Well, yeah, I mean, not necessarily long term, but I was concerned about moving y'all from one church to another. And when we went to one church, after Jill was older and driving, you remember I allowed her to stay at our home church there in Cleveland.
Yes.
And she didn't go with us. And one thing that I didn't want y'all to ever feel like that you had to follow us around
as adults.
I wanted you to have your own church. I wanted you to be rooted and grounded and be part of a church where you were comfortable and you knew that you were supposed to be. Now, I am delighted to have Jill and her family and Jeannie and her family as part of Welcome. But, you know, if they chose to go somewhere else and I, you know, pastored a different church. But yeah, I was concerned at different times when we moved churches.
Well, one time we all laid on the floor and cried.
Yeah.
Like, for a long time.
Yeah.
I told you that I was never speaking to anybody
in
that church. Even when we were walking in, you said, "Marianne, you need to behave yourself."
Yeah.
And I said, "That's fine. I'm not going to talk to anybody."
Yeah.
But I did.
Well, that's
and
all
I
right.
got over it. And I think we adapted fairly quickly to most
y'all
places.
Did great. Yeah. I think y'all did great.
You know, I mean, we had our moments, but we adapted pretty quickly. But the one thing about your parenting style, and I don't know if, you know, if those are the right words, but we were raised, and I didn't realize this until I kind of got out of college, but we were raised very kind of leave it to Beaver, other than, I mean, you didn't vacuum in high heels or anything, but, you know, we ate dinner every night together. You were very involved in what we were doing. I mean, I spent my first probably 2 years working in the emergency room at Emory and at Vanderbilt just with my mouth like hanging open because I could not believe how people lived because I didn't know it. And I don't feel like it was really a sheltered thing as much as, I mean, I guess it was a little bit of a sheltering thing, but it served us well to kind of have that background. But I was shocked when I saw how, you know, how people lived and kind of the messes that could be made of lives and of kids' lives and generationally, because I didn't really understand all of that. But I think people would be very surprised at kind of your parenting styles because we didn't have a curfew and we weren't really grounded. And it's not to say that there was no discipline. There was lots of discipline. But you kind of parented more around boundaries than specific rules. And we knew the boundaries, I guess, very well. But those were set up when we were very small. But kind of, did y'all talk about parenting? Did it just kind of happen as far as the way you chose to discipline us?
I guess it kind of happened as you went through it. Now, we did talk about it sometimes.
Yeah.
About what we needed to do or didn't need to do or what would be the best approach. But I think most of the time it just kind of happened as you went through it.
Did you disagree sometimes?
Sometimes.
We did,
yes. Sometimes.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
I mean, you very much appeared to be a united front and towards us.
Yeah.
But.
Well, if we disagreed, we didn't disagree in front of y'all.
No. Right.
No. And I would sometimes think Jimmy was hard.
I was.
And because, I was. No, I'm not saying you were. I'm just saying I think as a mother, you have that side of compassion to you.
I feel that way sometimes.
More than a dad does.
I feel like I was too hard sometimes.
But all in all, I think it worked.
Yeah.
I think we did the right thing. Now, not always. You know, sometimes we did the wrong thing. And you don't know. You don't know. You don't know if you're doing the right thing or the wrong thing. But you just hope and pray that you are. And you do. We did seek God's leadership in how to do some things. And
what to do.
She told me one time, you can let Jill hear this. She told me one time about Jill's many boyfriends that she said I didn't like that guy at all, and I really wanted to run him off. And she said, "You better leave him alone. You better hit your knees with this one."
Yeah.
And thank the Lord.
We'll talk about boyfriends in a minute. But there was a lot that were prayed out.
He was.
They were prayed out. But I feel like you weren't really concerned with small things. Just like the example we bought little Phil, my son, those ugly red shoes the other day. I mean, you've seen them. They're hideous. But that's one thing I learned from you all. Let people be individuals as far as when it comes to, if they want ugly red shoes, they can have ugly red shoes. But big things matter.
Matter.
And that's where the boundaries, because when I say you didn't set curfews, we knew we couldn't come in at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
I mean, we absolutely knew that. But you also knew us very well. You knew our friends, you knew where we were, and we knew that if we were ever caught where we weren't supposed to be, I mean, the hammer was coming down hard.
Yeah.
And I think that starts when kids are very little, that you do what you say you're going to do, and it's you just reinforce good behavior over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like y'all expected a lot of things from us as pastors' kids. You just expected us to behave a certain way because that's how you should, because we were a pastor's kid.
Y'all were our kids. That pastoring didn't have nothing to do with it, to me.
No.
Right. Now, one of the biggest struggles that we have to talk about is bathing suits. That was a huge fight. And then I didn't realize that it was actually I thought it was just about the bathing suits, but it was actually more of about teaching us to respect ourselves and respect how we looked in front of other people. And not that, but at the same time, we wanted to wear certain bathing suits and they weren't allowed. And Jill fought the good fight with that. I mean, she really fought the good fight. But just for fun, do you remember your bathing suit rules? This is for every dad.
I remember I didn't want Jill to have a two-piece bathing suit. And bathing suits and prom dresses.
Yeah.
I didn't want strapless prom dresses.
Right.
And you know, pastoring didn't have nothing to do with it at all. That didn't bother me. I never thought about that one minute. I just felt like you needed to learn to dress modestly. Mm-hmm. Now, y'all did later get two-piece bathing suits. I know you know of one instance that
we just talked about.
We disagreed.
Dramatic scene.
Yeah, but
we later came up with kind of rules. Just for all the people out there, there were no strings and no triangles.
That was it. No strings.
Fabric had to touch.
Yeah.
It was sewn together.
Yeah.
That was the biggest thing.
I think that worked pretty good.
It did, because we can still, there's plenty of bathing suits out there that meet that requirement.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
You just have to find them. But, you know, I knew because sometimes I would be taking you shopping.
Oh, yeah. We would veer off path.
Yeah.
Go off course.
And I knew, we can't bring that home.
Yeah.
We're not going to bring that home.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I think sometimes parents fail to realize that they can say no.
Yeah.
I mean, that's your job, to give that direction and to give some insight into why you do or why you don't do this. Mm-hmm. But that's part of your parenting job, is to, sometimes you can say yes, but sometimes it's no.
But I feel like you, I mean, there were some things that were just yes or no. We're not arguing about it. It doesn't, you know, but you did always tell us why. It wasn't just because, I mean, probably when we were really little, there was a lot of things just because I said so, because you can't reason. But when we were older, I mean, you told us this is why we're doing this. This not, there's not going to be a discussion about it, but this is why we're doing it. But, so it's just girls, there's no boys.
No.
And kind of our motto when we were growing up was, what do you need boys for?
Yeah.
And I'm still trying to figure that out. I'm just kidding. But how do you feel? We're all very different. It's weird, I guess, to say we all kind of have the same values and the same, there's an independence about all of us, but we're all very different. And how did you parent people to be three very different people kind of to grow up with the same values? Because you have to parent a little bit differently based on the child.
I remember that when Jenny was probably early teenager, she was always quiet, always. Even as a young child, she was quiet. And you and Jill were not. And I remember that you and Jill was trying to dress her in what you wanted her to wear and how you wanted her to look.
She was our baby.
And she hated it. She hated it. And I remember coming in and saying, stop. She can dress like she wants to. She can be who she is.
Yeah.
You don't make her into what you want her to be. She's who she is. And I think you just have to look at your
and know
kids, and know your kids. Some things work for one that will not work for another. And you just have to...
and kind of know when they're struggling. Because,
right.
And like, you didn't make Jill, when she was in late high school or college, when we, you know, you didn't make her go to the church that we went to.
Yeah.
And then there were times at that same church, because I feel like we all kind of felt a little like we were outsiders.
Yeah.
And I used to just beg you not to make me go to church on Sunday nights. I don't know why. I never liked Sunday night church. But I would just say, I guess this was after I started driving, but I would say, can I just be a slacker, please? Just on Sunday night. And it hardly ever happened. But sometimes you would just let me stay home.
Yeah.
And I think those are times when you knew that either I was struggling there or I just needed a minute, and you let me stay at home. And I think that knowing your kids, that's the only way you're going to know that, is to know them well.
Well, I go back to a time when you were sick, and we had to take you to the hospital with meningitis. You talked all the time before that, and I'd get a little bit, I won't say upset, but sometimes I'd say, well, you know, be quiet or something. And I remember telling Carolyn, I'm not ever telling her to be quiet again if she'll just talk.
I'm not sure you kept that promise.
Well, no, I don't think so.
Well, but I look at that as a time that I realized that all three, I mean, I knew that all three of you were different, and y'all were very different in a lot of ways. But at the same time, you're best friends with one another.
Yeah.
And, but if you want to say there was a time that I realized that you were different. Now, Jeannie's totally different to either one of you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. And it's great that you're different.
But I think you allowed us to be different
Well, I hope
than each other.
hope we did.
And it wasn't you comparison.
You want your kids to grow up to be individuals and to be strong and to have strong values, but you want them to be themselves.
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about Jill's love life. It was very dramatic. There were lots of boys in and out. I mean, there's been lots of boys over the years with all of us, but she had by far the most dramatic love life, because there were just, you know, Tommy Farr said that we were going to have a section at her wedding for the ex-boyfriend.
I forgot about it.
I just thought about it.
Yeah, that's right.
But dating was, because you said one time that when somebody asked you about us driving, that it wasn't near as scary for us to drive away in the car as it was for us to get in the car with a boy and drive away.
Right.
So how did you handle dating? Or, I mean, we, you know, it wasn't just like a free-for-all. We had some rules regarding dating and all that kind of stuff, or boundaries, really. But, I mean, how did you kind of handle that season of our life? You prayed a lot.
I remember saying when I opened the door one time, this one's going to put me on my knees.
Yeah.
And it did. But
who was that with?
We don't have to talk about it. We don't have to say who. Probably all three of you, to be honest. But, you know, you just go through it. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know that we had any certain rule or any certain way that we handled it. You just...
One thing that was kind of different from the way I felt like some of my friends were is that you all didn't treat boys... You were very nice to them and respectful of them. And, you know, I feel like most of our boyfriends felt comfortable in our home. But there wasn't all this pressure. You treated them like what they were. They were a boyfriend.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And they were really a passerby. Like, not that they were going to be a permanent fixture in our house.
Right.
There were no pictures. They didn't go on vacation with us.
No.
I mean, they were just,
that was your friends to me.
Yeah.
That's your friend.
That was your friend.
They're
that
here.
Happened to be a boy, and he's probably not going to be here forever.
Right.
I know that happens sometimes, that people meet people in high school and date them and they marry them. But as a general rule, it's not going to happen that way.
And that's kind of how they were treated.
Right.
I remember,
there was some good ones that we all loved.
Yeah.
And we would have kept.
Yeah.
But y'all didn't keep them.
But there was one, there's kind of one story with Jill, and I think it kind of sums up a lot of things, because you taught us to be strong and kind of independent, but not, you know, not... to be respectful, but also to stand up for ourselves when we had to. And we're not going to say any names, but somebody broke up with Jill on a Sunday afternoon. And she had to go to church that night.
Right.
And she didn't want to go. And she was crying and she was devastated. Because we all had those crying moments where we thought our life was coming to an end, and it obviously wasn't. But I remember that you went in her bedroom. And because she was like, I'm not going, I'm dying, whatever. And you said, get up. Get up, wash your face, put your clothes on. You're going and you're going to act like this doesn't bother you. And we are going to, you know, because we're going to get through this, but you're going and you're going to face this. And it kind of taught, I think, all three of us that we, you know, you're more than what that boy says you are right now.
Right. Let's just really get it. I won't say any names, but that boy's dad was preaching for me at that church that night.
That was like the worst day ever.
They were staying with us. They were visiting us that weekend, and he was supposed to preach. And the guy decides he's going to break up with Jill about an hour before we go to church. And, you know, I've talked to the guys several times since then. But anyway, I told her, I said, you're not going to let him ruin your life and ruin your day.
Right.
And
I said, she didn't.
She didn't.
She didn't. Mm-mm.
I said, you're gonna go. You just go sit with us. I don't care if he's sitting right behind us.
Just act like nothing
happened. Act like nothing happened.
Right. Forget it.
You're stronger than that.
Right.
And she was.
She was.
And I think that taught us all a lot. I mean, all three of us.
Yeah.
And he apologized. I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
Mama said he apologized.
Well, his daddy would have killed him, I think, if he could have.
I've judged him for years. He apologized.
Well, his daddy wanted to beat him up.
Well, you have to think he was young.
Yeah, he was.
Oh yeah, we all did crazy things.
Yeah, he was.
So we're almost done, but let's talk about Welcome. So you pastored there when I was little, for 6 years, and then about 10 years ago, almost 10 years ago, you went back to that church. Kind of what? How do you feel, or how do you know when it's time to leave or go to other churches, or what churches are right, and when it's kind of it's over?
Well, when I left Welcome in 1975, 85,
yeah,
yes, sure. Excuse me, when I left in 85, because I went there in 79.
Yeah.
When I left there in 85, I felt like it was time to go.
Yeah.
And that's hard to explain. And so it's like other things that you do in life, that there's sometimes you just know.
Yeah. The one thing, and this is kind of at the end, but the one thing that I've felt like has made you all, I don't want to say successful because that's not really what it is, but kind of been able to endure the long haul and hardships and good times and bad, is that Jesus has always been the center. And he's the center at Welcome, but he's been the center kind of our family. And how do you stay connected to that? Because that's the thing I've learned in, especially as an adult, is that is a daily thing. I don't do it the same way every day, but it's a daily thing to stay connected to that, and that kind of helps you keep your faith. But how do you stay connected to God and to Jesus?
Well, you, through the Word and through prayer, and through his Spirit living within us. I mean, it's like if there's something that comes between you and me, mm-hmm. I know it.
Right.
I may not know exactly what it is. I may not realize exactly what it is. But it's the same way with serving God. If I've let something, and it's me, it's not him. If I've let something get in my life or take his place, then I'm going to know it.
There's a struggle.
A little bit. And you're not going to feel good when there's a struggle.
Yeah.
And you know that there has to be a change, and it's not a change with God. He's the same. He's the same. His love never wavers. But you know, it's, I've got to do something. I've got to repent. I've got to draw near. I've got to, sometimes one or all of these things. I've got to get in the Word more. But it's me that has to change.
Because it's a personal relationship.
That's it. It's a personal relationship.
And I think you have to be intentional mm-hmm. about that relationship.
Yeah.
Just like you are with everybody else.
Yeah, you do. Because you can think, well, I went to church. But going to church is not going to be what all you need.
Right.
You need God's word daily in your heart through prayer, through reading his word. Just, you have to do it yourself.
I was in a small group at Cross Point a few years ago, and this lady said, and I've always thought about this, is she said, like, when the interesting thing about life is when God and I are okay, then I'm okay with everybody else.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I get snappy and I get judgy and I get impatient and things like that. And a lot of times it has to go back because I haven't connected and I haven't been, or haven't drawn near, and or there's something that I haven't repented for. But she was like, when we're okay, then everybody else is okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so just three more questions, and you have to just finish the sentences.
Okay.
And both of you have to do it. So, grace is?
Unmerited favor.
Anything to add?
Well, it's that. But grace is something we need to give a whole lot more of to people.
Yeah.
And faith is?
I'll let you go first this time.
Faith is just, it's believing when you don't see it. You just put your faith in God, no matter what.
It's a
trust and in his promises.
The definition's in Hebrews 1, and I'm not going to go into it, but it's really what Carolyn said. The last part of it says it's the evidence.
Yeah.
It's the evidence of things not seen.
Right.
And if you'll put your faith in God, he'll give you the evidence.
Yeah. And last question, Jesus is?
Love.
My Savior.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Mary and the Mic. Big thanks to my parents for this interview and for their never-ending love and support. You can visit Mary in the Middle blog and Mary and the Mic at maryannpence.com.